Hey guys, welcome to episode 144 of the podcast with my lovely, charming, wonderful, and amazing guest, Molly Quinn, whom I am very excited to be hanging out with in May in Australia and New Zealand. If you guys follow the Thrilling Adventure Hour, you know that they just recently announced that we will be doing some shows over there. Y'all who listen to the podcast, yeah, that's right, I said y'all. I just spent some time with a beautiful Southern girl. What do you expect? If you follow the podcast, you know that I had an extraordinary time there a couple of years ago, and I'm so excited to go back. I want to get some shout outs in, guys. On Facebook, I want to thank Chris and Sandra and Jillian and Abe for your comments and notes. I want to thank on Twitter. Yeah, that's right, Twitter, guys. I actually collected some Twitter shout outs I want to get out there to Mary, Aaron, Jimmy, Catherine, Hallie, Chris, Jen, Caro for also enjoying cute tiny things. I want to thank Coralie for your email. I want to thank Matt for your email, my fellow son of perdition. I'm not a son. Listen, guys, I'm a daughter, but you know what's up. Andrew, I want to thank you for your email. Chiaki in New Zealand, I want to thank you so much for your email. Hopefully we'll get a chance to meet while I'm there. And then before the New Zealand and Australia trips, I'll be at South by Southwest the weekend of March 13th, 14th, 15th. I will be at the Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle the weekend of March 28th. I will be at HavenCon in Austin, Texas on the weekend of April 4th. That's busy, guys. That's a lot of traveling. So hopefully I'll get to see some of you guys in person while I'm out there. I hope all's well with everybody. I want to again thank the those of you who are participating and helping out with the Pinterest account. I will also throw out there that I do have a few JV Club t-shirts left. I have men's larges and mediums, and I have women's larges left. And if you're interested, just send me an email at janet@janetvarney.com. We will work it out via PayPal. And that's it, guys. Thank you so much, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Now entering nerdist.com.
That is a terrible way to introduce your podcast.
No, which is to say, it's perfect. It's honest.
Listen, it's just a bunch of bullshit. So you want to hold your microphone like, you know, you're doing a show. Apologies okay. for that, but you'll get used to it. It'll all be okay.
I'm okay.
If you lower it too much, it'll deliver an electric shock to your system to remind you that... I'm just totally kidding.
What if that were real? I was like, I'm not going
to
test this.
I need you to keep it right up close to your mouth or you will get a very severe electric shock. And I'll have to take you to the hospital, but it's very important that the sound of my podcast be good.
All right.
So all you right. can understand. It's science.
Important
it's
business.
Just plain old science. My favorite thing so far about our correspondence leading up to the podcast was me asking for a teen picture and a current picture, which very frequently, with few exceptions, is like I'm asking someone in their late 20s, late 30s, late 40s. Right. And I get this, for those of you who are listening to this podcast, I get the most adorable text. It's like, so like last year versus this year? Or, and I was like, that's fair. That's very fair. But yeah, the idea is to sort of like draw the furthest distance between, you know, where you are now and kind of where we started out mm-hmm. as an adolescent. But you're still a delightful youngster. I said that like I was 70 years old.
Which one did you get? I had I don't know which one I sent you.
You sent me...
I'm in like a pink dress, right?
I think, well, it's pilot. Most... Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, good.
But you
good.
Know what? It's still been a while. Like, it's I definitely, been a while. I see the maturity in your face from the beginning to the end, from the last picture to the current picture.
I was at... there's this great shoe store called Lush on Venture Boulevard, and I went in there looking for a very specific pair of shoes for the Australia and New Zealand thing we're doing with Thrilling Venture Hour. And I saw these great, really tall, very much stripper boots, but I like kind of wearing shoes like that on occasion.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm looking at them, and granted, I kind of look like I do now, so you know I'm in, you know, no makeup, hair in a ponytail, you know, sweatpants. And my mom's with me, and we're like, oh, yeah, these might be great, this, that. And the woman who was working there comes out, and she's like, oh, yeah, you can't wear those. I mean, Mom, I'm totally with you. She should not have those.
Oh, no.
And I just kind of paused it and say anything. And she's like, so are you here looking for homecoming shoes or prom? And I was like, oh, she thinks I'm like 15. Yeah. Okay. I mean, great. I don't have a problem with it. Yeah. But funny things like that do still happen.
Oh, for sure. And also, like, as soon as you're put next to your parent, then I think age in someone's mind naturally drops even further because
right.
they're just like, okay, I'm going parent. Way young because you're with your parent. Yeah.
Because no one's friends with their parents.
One's friends with their parents. It is cool that you guys get to spend time together and be in the same place and sort of have that relationship. I know, you know, we've traveled together mm-hmm. and your mom is like, it's such a spitfire. I mean, that in the best Southern way.
Yeah.
But she's great. Like mm-hmm. my mom would never... my mom is a total hermit. I mean, these guys, I'm not going to like tell tales about my mom, but she's just not that person. You know, sure. she never would have been. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was like a huge traveler back in the day, but we just didn't have the kind of relationship that you and your mom have. And mm-hmm. so I had it with my dad, like he could have done that.
Right.
But yeah, it's just funny to imagine like my mom sort of being like your mom. I feel like my mom would be like, oh, you, I don't know. What is this hotel room? I don't know. Like,
She's wonderful. The first thing my mother said to me when we moved out here, my father, like, we literally just packed everything into our first one-bedroom apartment, which was weird for both of us because, you know, my mother really fought and got her education and, you know, took care of herself and then met my dad. So, you know, really worked at having a very prosperous life. So for her to be back in a very small apartment and for me, my first time being in a small apartment, I don't know how to explain it. It was weird.
Yeah.
But so we're unpacking some stuff. My dad had literally just left. She turns around like quicker than humanly possible, gets down eye level with me, points her finger and goes, there will be no rebellion.
Oh, all right. All right. And all right.
I knew if I stepped, you know, a toenail over an eighth of the line, I would be, you know,
yeah.
back in Texarkana.
Oh, my gosh.
Which it wouldn't be a bad thing, but, right, you know, for right. what we were doing.
And how old were you?
I was about 12 and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was no rebellion. And I know we talked about
this. All of this is sort of tucked away in my mind because I know we talked about mm-hmm. it. Probably when we were in Chicago together. So you'll have to indulge me, but this was specifically for like, we're going to come out so you can pursue acting in a more ardent way than you could, you know, in Texarkana.
Sure. It was more of, you know, I'd been studying since I was six, just for fun. Like, it was the most fulfilling thing for me to do because I did dance and I still play violin and tried to do art, and none of it was really enough. So when this old, you know, acting coach retired in Texarkana and we met and it all worked out, it was wonderful, and there was really no end goal with it was just for fun, and
just
that's
kind of a great way
yeah
to do it, right?
And that's kind of why I want to explain that, because also it wasn't most 6-year-olds when they go into classes and even until you're in your kind of tweens, like, it's a lot of improv games and you're not doing anything serious, but he was a very serious coach. I mean, I was reading Uta Hagen's, you know, Work of an Actor, and
oh,
you know,
my gosh, yeah, that's amazing.
Monologues from like Interview with a Vampire. He let me do whatever I wanted. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
And so then I ended up in Dallas doing a little summer movie camp because I had been pestering my parents for an agent, not knowing what it was, just knowing that I wanted one.
Yeah, that's a thing. It's connected to this. It means that somebody who would help me get to do more of this fun stuff.
Yes, what I thought they were is someone who just got you jobs.
Right.
Like, they just called you and like, hey, you're going to Africa to do this.
There's no auditioning process.
Auditioning was not a thing. I had no idea what that was. But so I got there, ended up there right when they were doing a agent showcase. And so the woman who ran the whole program was like, look, you know, her whole spiel, I usually don't do this, you know, you have to be in my school for 3 years, but
right.
I've never met a more talented mm-hmm. child than Molly, you know, that whole thing. So I met Cindy Osbrink. She signed me.
Dad, Osbrink's like very famous for having young people.
Yeah,
right?
They're excellent. And I remember seeing her picture along with the two other great agents who were coming, and I just knew. Like, I just knew that's, I literally pointed at her picture on the wall and was like, that's who I'm going to be with, to myself.
Yeah.
And that worked out, but my dad wouldn't let me come out unless I got work first. And he kind of went back on a promise. He always said I could go, you know, if I got an agent. So anyway, unfazed, I called Sydney. I was like, hey, gotta get some work. And she was like, no problem. God, 2 months later or so, I booked a Saved by the Bell remake for Disney Channel. That's how I got out here.
Yeah.
I didn't tell anyone I wasn't going to do it because there was no way in HE double hockey sticks I was going to do that. But I waited until we unpacked everything. Wow.
Listen to you, you little sneak. It's so, but like,
only for time you to I've have ever that done kind that. Of,
I mean, I just think it's amazing. Like, everything that you're saying, and I'm sure that the listeners are thinking this too, is like, there's just a lot of maturity there, which isn't to say that it's, you know, that has to be a reflection of like your overall, like that you weren't a normal 6-year-old or that right. you weren't a normal 12-year-old mm-hmm. or whatever. But to have that, I'm sure people have commented on it before, to sort of have those little wisdoms in that way where mm-hmm. you're like, I mean, kids are good manipulators, and I don't mean that, and if that true. Like it's I mean that in a very gentle, loving way, like that's when we learn to do that really early. Yeah. You know, it's like that's
mom says no, you go to dad.
Yeah, exactly. And like my parents who have young children who are really watching their development, like from toddler to like, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old, where they see mm-hmm. the like the inner workings of lying starting to happen mm-hmm. where like, you know, you're like, did you break this? And there's like a 5-minute pause where you see like you could see your child thinking like, I could say I didn't, but I did do it. And they have no sense that the time is passing. So when they're finally like, no, the parent is like, that's adorable, yeah. you little liar.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, to know even that you didn't want to do that job, you know, there would be kids who would be like, a job's a job. You know what I mean? Like right. people my age would say a job's a job. So to have those understandings, like, do you think it was because you were so classically trained and you kind of understood quality?
Oh God, no, I don't think so. I mean, I grew up watching pretty adult films. Like, I was very young when I saw Gladiator, and you know, Dracula with Gary Oldman was my favorite movie. Like these very adultish, you know, to definitely. I really shouldn't have been watching them at my age, but I don't think that had anything to do with them. And people do say like, oh, you're so mature, like these wisdoms. And I'm like, no, I think what it was is that I was very much a child and I was raised in a very secure environment and I felt like I could do anything. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so it was more the security. And like I said, being very much a 12-year-old and being like, oh, the sky's the limit. My parents support me. I can do everything. Now I'm very much that a job's a job.
Right, right.
You know, so yeah, I think it was not being mature. I think it was being a child and having that faith.
Yeah. I mean, but like that's sort of the flip side of the argument that I think gets made and I say about myself. And of course, it's very easy to have, you know, not even hindsight, but just be like, well, I came out when I was supposed to. You came out when you were supposed mm-hmm, to, that sort of thing. But that, you know, people who are like, oh, I wouldn't want my kid to get into show business because it's so painful or da, 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 da. But it feels like you kind of had this nice balance of like the experience of being really fun, doing it in a place that is definitely not Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And there's still just like an enjoyment factor to it. But it was something you could develop a seriousness about very mm-hmm. early mm-hmm. for that reason and not have it be so commercial. Right. And then, I mean, it just feels like the timing and, again, your upbringing was so key and, you know, yeah. having that first. And I kind of feel like in a way I had the same experience even though I was in my 20s mm-hmm. because it was the same thing where it was like, well, I don't really know how this all works, so I guess I'll just say no to stuff, or you know what I mean? I just won't feel like auditioning felt like a fun thing.
Oh, so much fun.
You know, it was like, oh, I had grown up jobs leading up to that. So mm-hmm. I was like, all you need me to do is read these pages. This is really fun. This is like a hobby.
Exactly.
You know? And yeah. so I think having that soft landing, not to be too hippie about it, but where you kind of can be that person and then over time kind mm-hmm. of go, oh, so I was really lucky and I yeah. should be grateful for that. And I should, you know, mm-hmm. honor that mm-hmm. and understand that like sometimes I will get anxious about how hard this is exactly. and all that kind of stuff, you know?
I think, you know, and I think the most important thing, like you said about people saying, oh, I don't want their children to be in this, that and that and the other. I think it's important for parents to have that mentality. My parents in no way, you know, wanted me to be out right. here. My mother still asks me when I'm going to apply and go to University of Texas.
Very specific. University of Texas. That's
But I think the most important thing, like if you notice that a child is developing interests toward it, put them in serious training. Don't throw them into these silly little improv classes. And I will call them silly little improv classes. Not only will they gain a much more mature understanding of the art, which you need because it is extremely competitive, no matter if you are 6 years old, 12 years old, 20 years old, 40 sure. years old, but also they will either with that serious training realize, oh, there is work that goes into this. I don't want to do this. It's not a game.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, you shouldn't treat it as a game really until you get older and you have all that seriousness done. Like now I go to improv classes and it's fun, but since I have all that classical training, it's like, oh, I know how to actually apply this.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. That totally makes sense. It's that whole idea of sort of knowing all the rules so that then you can break them instead of starting out like, there's no rules, yay!
Exactly. And then being blindsided and then getting to be in, you know, your you know, the 18-year-old range and being like, oh my God, these people actually know what they're doing. They've read Stanislavski and, you know, Mammoth.
Yeah. Well, what do you think? So when you were kind of getting that training, I mean, I'm just interested because that's, of course, something I studied in college. I'm saying, of course, like, you know, but like I was a theater major. And so that was the stuff I was getting into in college. In high school, I was in theater, but it was like not, you know, nobody was like really teaching me any of the fundamentals.
Right.
It was more just like, we're going to put this play on, everybody. But how I think what's interesting about that is, you know, I mean, I don't, this is classic me, like not even knowing how to form a question, but the idea of identity thank you. That is what matters. No, but like the idea of identity as a child versus identity as a teenager versus identity as an adult, there's such an interesting relationship to like a sense of self and who you are versus who you'll be portraying and the lines blurring there and stuff like that. And I'm so interested in the idea of really classical training like that as a young child, kind of how, what lens you looked at that through. And I don't,
when it comes to character development,
metaphysical question. Yeah, I guess. I mean, because it's because we all play pretend as kids, right? Sure. And then to have someone say, well, now listen, this is, there's that. And that's very tied to this, but this is a rigorous kind of series of methods that these different people developed into how to not be that kid pretending anymore and to really develop it into something artistic and and like a skill, exactly.
I think that's a great question that I've actually never been asked before, so it's exciting.
She gave me like a little complimentary nod. Like, good on you, Janet.
It's great because I'm really excited because I've never really talked about this before. Something that I'm realizing now as I've been looking back, because I think as professional actors, we do a lot of reflecting, or at least you should, you know, and it's very kind of self-involved and, you know, a little egotistical, but you do all the time. and Martin Beck, who was my mentor, my first guy, the love of my life, he started me when I was that young, when I was 6, 7, with animal study first. And I, of course, didn't really know what we were doing at the time. But what it was he would say, okay, Molly, you have to be a turtle. And I'd come in and I'd have to be a turtle. I'd get on the ground, I'd play, or I have to be a snake or a giraffe. And this went on for a couple years. And it was so much fun. But getting into just the body, making it so basic.
That's such a good point.
Being something besides yourself. And then growing that into. And that's why, like, he never said no to me. So when I said, like, I want to do Brad Pitt's monologue from Interview with a Vampire, he was like, that's great. Do you know how to be a boy? And he would say, go watch your brothers, go do this. Like, he started that so early and made it very much kind of, made it a game. And so as I got older, it's so funny because like you said, when I was young, it was fun and it was pretend and it really allowed me to immerse myself because I also grew up in a very rural area. So there was, this is what I got to do all day. No one judged me. There was no nothing. I was out in my backyard or in a field or, you know, by a creek doing these things.
Yeah.
And then when I got to be 12 or so, when my professional, if you will, career started, that did develop into character work with humans. and I still used animal study. I started saying, oh, well, what is this girl? Is she kind of seems like an alligator. Like I would use that.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah, in the study. But what I noticed and what the big change was when I tried to apply it to humanity was I carried it around with me every day. Like I remember one of the first films I did was this movie, My One and Only. And my mother didn't want me to do it because she was like a 1950s bad girl, essentially. Like I had to bare my chest in the movie, you know, that type of stuff. And I smoked all the time. Mm. And so my mother actually taught me how to smoke with, you know, with fake cigarettes. But I was a little terror for those months. I couldn't turn it off, mm-hmm. is what I'm saying.
Like, yeah.
With animal study, when I was that young, it was a game, so I could turn it off. I didn't go around acting like I was an alligator all day.
Right.
But applying the animal study and then putting it into humanity, I couldn't turn it off. Mm-hmm. And I really still have a problem doing that. Like I think now coming into my early 20s, I've gotten a lot better at turning it off, but I still catch myself. I'm like, oh, don't. Why are you acting like a drug addict? Like the other day I was reading this script that I was going out for and the girl was addicted to speed, I think. And I literally was shaking and I was walking around the house and I was picking out jewelry and I was
fast. And it was great though.
Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like take a breath, step back from, cause that's just as important.
Yeah.
Cause that helps you not be crazy. Cause I think that's where craziness comes from, is that you forget how to turn it off because you do have to sacrifice yourself and become someone else. If that's a type of performer and actor you want to be, you know, there's a big difference between being an actor, being a movie star, doing, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, are you playing yourself or are you?
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah. And there are very different. And I think that's like, it's either one is fine. You know, if there are actors who just, you know, feel comfortable kind of being, mm-hmm. bringing what they bring to the table as, you know, because that's you, I mean, I guess you learn too that, you know, and you'll be able to speak to this better than I can in terms of the technicalities of it, but the idea of becoming someone different, mm-hmm. versus the sort of school of thinking that's like, they're all you, they're all a little piece of you, mm-hmm. just blow up this one piece of you. And I think in, especially working in television, like for someone like me, I just, now I sort of have to think on those terms, mm-hmm. because that's not true. I choose to, because I'm not a fighter. I'm just like work sounds good. Sure. I like being funny. Do you know what I mean? But like, I'm not fighting actively, like saying, you know, why don't people think I can play this? I can play this. It's more just like, well, if I'm going out for sitcoms, like I'm not surprised that the range that is assumed I have, mm-hmm. is limited to, well, I saw her in this, this, and this. I don't really think she's this person. She's more of a this person. I'm more accepting of that than probably I should be.
No, I don't think but it's so just at all.
But like, you know what I'm saying? So if you were just like, then I start looking at it that way rather than being presented with something that's so far outside of, mm-hmm. my Janet, what I bring into an audition room as a, mm-hmm. person, mm-hmm. That I kind of almost have to be like, how does this work again? Like, how do I know this is what I studied, you know, I should be able to become Brad Pitt in Interview with a Vampire. I got to really like reconnect with that,
yeah.
you know? And so when I get asked to audition for something that's like a real character, mm-hmm. it's so exciting. Mm-hmm. It's so fresh, mm-hmm. because it actually takes more work than, yeah. just like, oh, okay, so this is a woman in her 30s who's, you know, creative and silly, and
all I need to do is break down the beats,
yeah,
and make like, sure exactly. that I get the punchlines.
Okay, I don't have to,
but that's,
you know,
but beautiful too, you know, like being a technical actor is something that I think is really important, which is a lot more prevalent in TV as opposed to feature, and especially as opposed to independent feature. And what's great now is a lot of feature directors are wanting that technical actor, the one who comes in, knows the mark, has everything down, and then on top of that has the talent. You know what I mean? Because you get a tendency with actors who, you know, do a lot of indies and stuff like that. They love to improvise. They're all over the place. Like the truth is, like, that isn't artistic, that's sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
And directors are realizing that and they aren't liking that.
Well, because everything costs money. And that's what I think is that's the hardest. And by the way, this is not a podcast about the business, but like it's such a part of your teenagerhood that I'm really, I find it totally fascinating.
We'll get away from it.
But yeah, but like, no, but I mean, you know, the idea that, like, that is the number one hardest thing about this business is the amazing amount of super creative people who think with their hearts, mm-hmm. you know, who are not, and the laziness thing totally plays into it, don't get me wrong, but, you know, in a situation like that where one type of person comes here thinking of it just as art and just as the opportunity to mm-hmm. sort of be that, you know, kid imagining, which I have a, there's a big part of me that's that, mm-hmm. Versus, you know, no, this is a money driven business. Mm-hmm. This is totally mm-hmm. like, you know, can you open a movie? Can you this?
Yeah.
How much does your insurance cost? Because you're a drug addict. And if the show has to shut down, it costs this much.
Right.
And you know what I mean? Like all of that stuff that, boy, they're just two, there's like these very different chunks of people working in this business. Mm-hmm. It's no wonder that like some of them hate each other. You know what I mean? It's no wonder that a line producer is like, please don't get me started on actors. I loathe them.
Exactly.
Versus an actor being like, if I have one more network suit, tell me that I blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? You can go to those polarities.
Yeah.
And that's not helping anyone.
It's just so silly. I find that very silly because we all need each other to do this. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really the most wonderful thing about Hollywood and about making movies and TV and entertainment in general, I guess, is the teamwork. And I think when we stop remembering and stop focusing on that, that's when things fall apart. I think so that's when we see great shows fall apart and franchises or even just regular movies. That's really probably my favorite thing about this is teamwork and feeling like, not necessarily with a big family. I've never felt that way. But knowing that we're all working towards a common goal and that this all matters to all of us.
Well, I think that's a very mature outlook, too, because if you think of it as a big family, then there's the opportunity for like a lack of professionalism.
Yeah, it gets a little too personal.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I...
And you know what? If you didn't have a strong family unit on your own, like if you didn't have your mom out, if you didn't have a relationship mm-hmm. with your parents in that way, mm-hmm. then you might be seeking that familial support.
Yeah, which is just another wrong thing. Yeah, and that's I think that's a flaw of the artist, too. And that's a great thing. Artists are flawed. That is our job. And I think if you want to find a family... as an artist, if you want to keep that inner child alive, which I think is very important, find classes that matter to you. Mm. Find a school that that can be that family. Like I'm working at a place now called The New Collective that really feels like that. And I'm allowed to just play, to just mm-hmm. be that child. Because like we said, you can't do that on set. Like that isn't the place to do it. But there are places.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? Like
right.
you find those places, like even if it's just, I don't know, doing Groundlings or
sure.
anything else. But you know, getting away from not necessarily, you know, audition technique and things like that. Like those are great classes. And I think as actors, you should always be studying and just keeping fresh. But even more than that, doing, you know, more eclectic stuff. Like I'm again studying animal technique right now because obviously that's my favorite thing to do.
Oh, it's so cool
and
though.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that just going back to that for a second too. Yeah, this idea of getting into your body. I mean, that was something that really got drilled into me in by one of my teachers mm-hmm. in college because like I'm very cerebral, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so he kept assigning me scenes that were just like very physical mm-hmm. and very, you know, like not, honestly, like not educated characters. Like he really right. wanted me to just sort of get out of my head.
Yeah.
You know, you hear that a lot, mm-hmm. especially if you're a really analytical person, like mm-hmm. you were saying, you know, you get so solipsistic that you're like, let me think about all of this.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, it's so important to just kind of know that like you're never going to have a problem of not thinking enough about something. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. why not just like let some of that fall away
yeah.
and try to just be a person or be an animal or be a creature, whatever.
Exactly.
It's so interesting. So and just you remind me siblings.
Mm, I have three brothers and a sister. My sister is married and has three beautiful little girls. Mm. Very precocious. It's actually awesome. They are. Brooklyn is the oldest. She'll be 10 soon. Addison is the middle. She's 7. And then Caitlin is the baby. She's 3. And Caitlin does not want to be the baby.
Okay. Yep.
Caitlin mm-hmm, is mm-hmm. all about, you know, being in charge. And she's really the peacemaker. It's I love all of them, the pieces. But it's really fun to be old enough to appreciate watching
that
Caitlin.
Dynamic. And,
well, the
yeah.
dynamic. And especially watching Caitlin grow up. Because I did miss out on watching Brooklyn and Addison grow up. Because, God, I was so young. You know, I think I was 12 or 13 when Brooklyn was born, mm-hmm. you know? I was like 11. I was mm-hmm. 11 when Brooklyn was born. And you know, you're so all over the place. You're constantly thinking when you're that age, or at least I was, that I was never really present. Like even now being present is a difficult thing for me to do. But anyway, so those are those three. And They're amazing. And then my brother Thomas is married, and I love his wife. She's fantastic. And they have a little boy who's not two yet. He's 1.5. I think he's 1.5. Mm-hmm. His name is Thomas. Oh my God. Just so smart. So damn cute. What did my father say? He was over at the house, and they're playing Trains, because as a lot of little boys do,
sure,
Thomas loves playing with trains, and he knows all the trains.
I mean, his name's
names.
Thomas.
His name is Thomas.
Yeah. He must have felt that was very significant for
exactly.
him.
Exactly. Yep. So they're playing, and all of a sudden, my dad said that we call him Tommy Two Shoes. Mm-hmm. Tommy Two Shoes runs out of the room, goes into his bedroom, and comes out with a conductor hat on.
Okay. All right, everybody. It's like, oh, that's pretty great.
Pretty awesome. But
yeah,
it's wonderful watching children grow up.
And are you the baby of your family?
I am the baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when you guys moved out here...
Oh, I'm sorry. And then there's Joshua. My other brother has a boy.
Oh, sorry. No, that's my bad.
No, that was my fault. My other... And it's quick. My other brother, Marcus, has a son named Joshua, who's... I think he should be around 3 soon. And he's equally adorable and the biggest smile you've ever seen.
So when you... And so those guys were old enough that when you guys moved out here, your mom and your dad and you... Everybody else was like in college or
yeah. My mother is the only one who moved out here with me.
Sorry.
Yeah, my father, his business had started, and so he came out then once a month and stayed for about a week.
Cool.
Every time, which was great, because my father and I are extremely close. You know, I'm very much a daddy's girl. If my mom and I hadn't had this time, we wouldn't have had a relationship. Mm-hmm. I remember telling her that when I was 16 or so, just thanking her for coming out. And even if nothing had worked out, now I feel like I know her. And I remember she actually got pretty upset about it, because she was like, I was there. I didn't know you didn't feel like we didn't have a relationship. And I was like, yeah, there was really, if anything, I kind of resented my mom for a long time, because she would work. My mother was an anesthesiologist, so she worked all the time. And I was always with my dad on like Boy Scout trips and all this stuff, because my dad had a scout troop. And it was just, every day was fun. Every day was an adventure. And I remember, I think I was 10 or so, my mom went into, tried to do early retirement. I was so mad. I just thought she was taking my best friend away. The idea that they were married or in love, none of that applied. Like, she was taking my best friend away. Mm-hmm. So thank God that retirement didn't last long.
It was the best gift she ever could have given you.
So, you know, so it's been great. And in a lot of ways, you know, and also very bittersweet, because I miss my dad every day. I definitely don't see him enough. He's really the best father.
And I can't think of anything further from being an actor, maybe, than being an anesthesiologist.
Further, but just as artistic.
Yeah.
That work is really, it's a beautiful science. And what's interesting, because they are so different, but my mother and I are so similar in that when she was growing up, her best friend's parents owned a pharmacy. So they could play with all the drugs, like formaldehyde. And my mother told me, before she knew, she didn't know what she was doing, but they would put frogs to sleep.
Oh, wow.
And then like wait till they woke up. Like they knew. And I asked her one day, I was like, well, how many didn't come back?
Yeah.
And she was like, my track record has always been perfect.
Defensive. It's perfect. She also was into animals.
Into animals.
Becoming humans.
So early, without really knowing. Mm-hmm. Because she's like, I had no idea what anesthesia was. I just knew that I liked doing this thing.
Isn't that so interesting?
It's really bizarre. So in that way, we are identical. We both knew. Without
early
knowing,
understanding of this, like, inherent
it.
Foundational kind of understanding. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. Yeah. Anesthesiology. I mean, that's like so vitally important.
Well, thank God for it.
So vitally important to like the entire way our medical practices has evolved.
Mm-hmm.
And a very different, interesting responsibility than the person who's making the incision, you know, and pulling the gallbladder out or what have you.
Right.
But like, how incredibly, talk about teamwork. Holy smokes.
Another thing, that's another thing that my mother and I really value is teamwork. And that's why she loved her job. And that's, like I said, why I really love mine.
Yeah.
But I tell you, there are a few people better than her at breaking down a script. Like, I always have her look at them after I look at it, just to get a different perspective on it, because the things she thinks about, I just would never think about in a million years.
Cause oh, wow. We're very so cool.
What is that? Like, as similar as we are, we're very much the opposite sides of the spectrum. Yeah. So that's been a huge blessing. Anyway, yeah, that's been a huge blessing.
Does she, and so when you guys travel together, how much, like, because now you're at this kind of critical age, and shout out to your mom if she listens to this, I think she's a great lady. How that, I think we talked about it too a little bit in Chicago, but the thing that gets kooky, right, when you have somebody who's, you know, you're working at such an early age with all these adults, right? Mm-hmm. That's a huge difference for a young person in this business versus, you know, just being in school with mm-hmm. a bunch of kids. And that's like pretty much who you interact with. Yeah. And that kind of can foster more and more maturity because you understand how to speak to somebody who's 70 years older than you, who's 20 years older, yeah. how to be an equal in that way. Sure. You know?
I mean, I never thought of myself as an equal, but a lot of that does come from, like I said, like, I was with my dad on these scouting events constantly, and his troop, they were all teenagers, but you know, there were a ton of other scoutmasters around. My dad was the cook when we would go to the big camps. His name was Muchtun Sechgachtun, which means the great cook.
Wonderful.
And so I was constantly around adults as a kid. And so not just my dad's friends, but also my mom's colleagues and friends as well. I never spent time really with kids my own age. Like, either I was playing with my brother's friends, who, you know, my brother is, God, you know, over 10 years older than me, mm-hmm, you know. Mm-hmm. And not to say I didn't have a few that were my age, but I literally had a few, meaning like two.
Right.
And they were both extremely intelligent and are both doing extremely well now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of that was just with my growing up as well. So I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no. I'm glad to clarify all that, because that makes a lot of sense. Too, in terms of like you coming into this business and feeling a comfort level in mm-hmm. that way as well. But, you know, the difference between you being, you know, now you are not a teenager mm-hmm. and that's just an interesting, like, bless both of your hearts, right? Because she's still such a part of your life. Mm-hmm. But that's a really interesting close transition to make in such a unique set of circumstances mm-hmm. as you are both in. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not asking you to like tell tales out of school, but but
like, what's it been like?
Well, yeah, I just think that's just a particular challenge because it's not dissimilar from someone who continues to live at home through college. Right. I mean, I think a lot of us have had experiences like that.
Yeah,
but it's just interesting.
The only thing that's really different about that, in which I've explained, in which thankfully a few years ago really sunk in with my mother. Is that, because that's how she would compare it to. She's like, well, you know, a lot of people live, you know, when they're going through school. And I was like, yeah, but they don't live in a house that they're paying for and on the money that they're making. So you know, there's a difference.
Absolutely.
And that was really hard for her and for us to talk about. And that took a few times. Like, I remember on my 20th birthday, I had met this guy, and my mother and father had put this great dinner together, and I went to the dinner and it was great. And I went and saw a movie with a friend after. And then I had my friend drop me off at this, the Troubadour, mm-hmm. to meet up with this guy. And my mom is calling me and she's like, Molly, you just need to get home. This just isn't appropriate. It's midnight. You need to get home. And I was like, Mom, I'm going to be out. I've been warming you up. Cause that's the thing with my mom. You got to warm her up for like uh-huh. a week. So I warmed you up. You knew I was doing this. And she's like, well, I'm not comfortable with it. And at the time I didn't have a pedestrian gate. I just had my big gate that blocks my property. And I was like, well, I don't have my gate opener with me, so I need you to leave the gate open for me so I can get in when I get home. She's like, no, I'm not gonna leave it open. And so I paused and I remember being so proud of myself because without any tone, without getting into it, I was just like, Mom, it's my house. You have to leave the gate open. And there's this pause and she was like, fine. And hung up. And I had a great night. It was a fantastic night and the gate stayed open and I got in just fine. But it's little things like that and really just an understanding that I want her to be here and I know that she feels like she still needs to be here and we just have to respect each other and be open and honest with each other. And we really are. And a lot of people would say, I guess, to a fault, but I think that's kind of a silly phrase. She has to know everything that's going on with my life to understand what I'm doing. Because I don't want to hide anything from her. Cause then I feel like I can't talk to her. And if she's supposed to be my counsel, if that's why she wants to be here, then she has to allow me to feel comfortable talking about things. And that's why like in Chicago, I was having boyfriend issues. And I remember telling her a couple of days ago, I was like, you know, I wish you could have let me be more in charge of my relationship, because I felt like I couldn't say anything to you because I felt like you were so against it that none of your advice would be even or, or equal.
Yeah, that wouldn't be unbiased, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Which and, is, again, another like thing every parent goes through, right? When they're trying to sort of, that you want to have like an open mind about something that your child's doing, but you feel this attachment. You know, I was just, well, I'll just say really quickly because I'm interested in it because I don't have kids. I was talking to someone that I had podcast, and then there was a totally surprising situation with the file that got sent in that totally got corrupted and like it's gone forever. So I'm sure we'll record again. But she was talking about having kids, and she said, she was like, you just don't. And by the way, how many times do we roll our eyes in our entire lives when someone's like, you don't understand until you're doing it? And we'll know that like you will continue to hear that till the day you die, yes, because everyone has always had more experience than you because there are people older than us. But she was like, you know, when you have a child, it literally, as a mother especially, feels like you have every right to be involved because that is a piece of you. It is not, you know what I mean? It's literally, it's, I mean, if you're adoption, obviously you can maybe make a different argument as a mother. You'll make a different kind of argument. But as a person who naturally birthed your child, you have, she's like, she's like, you can't control it. You actually feel like your atoms were split and you are existing in two places at once. Yeah. You are existing in your child's body and you're existing in your body. And you kind of feel like you get to say, I don't like him.
Yeah.
I'm there too with you guys on that date and I do not want to be there. Do you know what I mean? And that's, it was a really interesting way of describing it. It's like one of those aha things where you're like, oh yeah, of course that makes sense. But no one had ever said it to me in that way.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, so you're, that really is like an itch you can't not scratch, right? You know, it's like, I can't imagine how hard it would be as a parent to just hold your tongue and be like, you really like this person. Okay, okay.
Yeah. Well, especially when you have as bad of a track record as I do. Like, I don't I don't bring home, you know, gold stars in the dating department. And that's fine. I've always been very open with that because I very much, I like eclectic different people, and a lot of time they're people that I really don't have anything in common with, and I'm just kind of...
Because you're interested, you're like a studier of people, not to be too clinical about it, but you're interested in what's not you, and you're interested in what motivates people, especially if you can't see it right away.
Yeah. Sure. So trying to get that through to your parents is just impossible. You can't. And my parents have been... They've been so open-minded. And so we every now and then have talks like that. But we never have a fight that we don't resolve immediately. We never sleep angry, which I guess is kind of something that you say when you're a couple.
But it's a partnership, right? I mean, that's what you're talking about. It's absolutely a partnership. I think it's like that with any two people who are that intertwined in their kind of day-to-day and decision-making and trust and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it's hard. And it's hard to think, you know, she for the past... For the past year or so, has been going like back and forth. Like, she's, God, kind of barely here, unfortunately. And it's funny because I do say unfortunately. For a long time, I was very much looking forward to it. And then when you realize that someone that you very much love and depend on is gone, you know, it makes all that time you had a lot more sweeter, and it makes the fight seem, you know, more stupid.
I feel like we even talked about that too, because I remember... when we were talking about it, I was like, you know, it's going to be so great and bittersweet when you get to miss her.
Yeah.
You know, which is very true for, you know, and I feel that way about, that's one of the great things about when you do kind of split off from your parents at whatever age that happens. And it doesn't mean that, you know, you don't come back together and, you know, we've all in different parts of our lives had the closeness or the slight more separation. But yeah, to have that feeling of, oh God, I actually wish I saw her more instead of, you know, the sort of adolescent feeling that a lot of us go through where we're like, I can't wait to get out of here.
Exactly.
You know, it's very human. And there should be that feeling, right? You shouldn't be like, I can't not ever be with her. You know, like that's part of the evolution of, you know, adulthood too.
Yeah. But. And, you know, the thing is like, there isn't anything that I can't do. And that's been that way, you know, even when she was here, you know, since I was really 18, like there wasn't ever any, I never felt like I wanted her to leave because there was I would just be doing the same thing if she's here or not. There was nothing. And it was both of us. It was that when I really want to do something, I'm going to do it, even if it's a terrible idea. And even if everyone's telling me not to do it, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And other stuff, it just, she gets it. Like, it's really a cool relationship. It's only when I date someone that it's up in arms. So the next relationship I have will definitely be ways away. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. when I've been by myself for a while. And who knows, maybe it'll be an actual real one, not a case study. But well,
I hate to, and listen, again, I hate to pry, but I really sparked to what you said. And what obviously I immediately was like, is it because you're interested in people? Like, yeah. Obviously I can relate to that. So what, when you, not to, I don't mean for you to be like, I'm going to name all of these people
of
or whatever,
not,
but
I won't.
What, where do you feel like you understand that about yourself and feel like you need to actively change that? Or do you feel like it's a part of who you are and you need to find a way to make that work into something long term? Like, what? Because you're also young enough that it's not like, you know, you're 35 and you've married three men.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For 3 years at a time.
Yeah.
And it was just a mess. Like, you're also allowed to have, to sort of be still figuring all that stuff out.
Sure. And you know, not all of them have been a case study. My first boyfriend, when I was 16, and we were together for about 2 years, I was very much in love with. And
yeah, that's a long time for, every time someone says they have a long-term relationship in their teens, I'm always like, whoa.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. And it was wonderful and it was beautiful and I was very much infatuated. Thank God it didn't work out, but I was in love and my heart was definitely broken. And so that kind of led to a string of not really being in love with anyone and purposely not dating people that I could love, unfortunately.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's really the best way to explain it. I really like people that are, and this kind of will sound weird, but that are talented. I love meeting potential. That's a better way to put it. I love potential.
Mm-hmm.
So with people that I've dated, whether they've been screenwriters or directors or, you know, drummers, guitarists, it doesn't matter.
Sure.
Like, people that have had unique talents, like, I really love to foster that, which is probably another similar thing between my mother and I. She loves to foster that stuff, and so do I. But that hasn't really worked out because a lot of people tend to resent that, especially if you're younger, because you can't help but date, even if it's just a little older.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's still a little resentment there. But, you know,
so that's
we'll
basically
see what happens.
To read between the lines, it sounds like you're saying you are in a place where obviously none of us are ever stopping growing or stopping learning or stopping mm-hmm. developing.
Well,
but in terms of the way this business regards success on mm-hmm. that level, you're doing it. You're already doing it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And so if you're interested in people who are still growing that, are you saying that there's a little bit of like
resentment.
Great. I'm struggling still. And that's a very roller coastery feeling. And for you to be in a more stable place,
maybe.
It can be hard on both sides to see, you know, the resentment of like, how dare you not be struggling like this? Don't you know how hard
God,
this is for me?
I would hope not, but you're probably right. I've come to terms with my last relationship, just realizing that, you know, he did think he was smarter than me. Like, a lot of people that I've tried to date seriously, I end up breaking up with because they want to change me for some reason, which is such an odd thing, because I would never. My one thing, what I tell all my girlfriends is, when you're looking to date someone, if you're looking at them and you go, oh, they'd be great if they did this or if they changed this and that, do not date them. You
yeah.
cannot change another human being. Like, take them for what they are.
Yeah.
And if that works for you, then great. And that's very much how I am. I never go into a relationship trying to change people. I go into a relationship trying to help when I can, you know. But I haven't met that. I haven't met my helper. I'm looking for my helper.
Right,
so.
Right, right.
And I hope I do. I mean, it's funny. I love children. I very much wanted to marry my first boyfriend very seriously. And it wasn't pie in the sky. Like, I really wanted to. And it's funny, you know, you hear people saying like, oh, children aren't fun when they wake up screaming at 4 a.m. type of thing. And I remember telling my mom not too long ago, I was like, I will relish every scream.
Yeah.
Like, I've always wanted children because I understand children, you know, since I was very little. You know, it's not just my siblings that have had kids. All my cousins, like, I grew up, when you're the 10-year-old, you're watching the 2-year-olds and you're, you know.
Sure.
There's so many babies around constantly in my
yeah.
family. And I was really the one who who just loved that, who relished holding them and watching them. And it's scary to think, and I've been thinking about this recently, that I may be that person who really wants it and who never gets it.
It is so charming to hear you say that.
I say that because I've always done everything before my age. And mm-hmm, not a lot before my age, but enough in advance that the idea now that I haven't met someone makes me think that.
Yeah.
And I have kind of been coming to terms with it. Like, you know, I will deal with what comes, and it is kind of silly. Like, but I admit
also, like, people still, again, it never goes away. People who are older than you never stop that. Like, I say, I'll be around because same thing. We're right. In this business, yeah. Right? Where I have a friend, you know, if I'm with Lorraine Newman, who, mm-hmm. you know, for example, who's 60, mm-hmm. if I say something like, I don't know, I guess I'm just never going to, whatever it is, she will laugh. And she does not think of herself as smarter, or she sees me as an equal, 100%. It's just something she can't not do because she's right. been around longer on the yeah. earth, which is great and I respect it. Mm-hmm. But it still happens no matter what. You always will yeah. have someone who's like, oh, bless your heart. You're a spring chicken. Yeah. Listen to you saying yeah. this never. You know, and so I don't mean it in any way in a condescending way, because I, like you, have had people who've been older than me my whole life, you know, yeah. that I was like, this is a dear friend of mine. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, they're sort of my aunt-ish, or yes, mm-hmm. you know, this person is sort of whatever that figure is, you know. But it doesn't mean that I don't still feel like that person would still call me and say, ugh, I just had the worst day, da da da. It's not yeah. just like a one-way street,
Totally see what you're saying. And it's funny that you want to make sure that I don't feel that you're being condescending, because yeah, I've been around older people my entire life, and I've dealt with this every single day of my entire life. And I've never taken it that way. I realize that it's a sign of loving and a sign of friendship, because that's what you do when you love and you want to be friends with someone. Like, you share your advice, and with age, you know, there comes more life experience.
Yeah.
And if I'm lucky enough to be around those people, then of course I want to soak it up.
And also, like, at the end of the day, what is the alternative? That you want the person who's been around 20 years longer, or 30 years longer, or even 10 years longer to go, I'm glad you see that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's true.
Yeah.
I'd say the chances are zero. That
yeah.
You're going to, you know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
Like, no one wants that.
Exactly.
It's great to have someone go, I don't know about that yet, you know?
Yeah, I think all that works out the way it's meant to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God, how ridiculous. I'm just imagining if someone did do that. Yeah, Molly, that's,
I'm really
glad. Give up. I would just have everything tied.
Yeah,
I would just
exactly.
have everything tied now.
Go ahead. Just
kill your dreams.
Yeah.
Sew it up. Sew it on up. Stitch it on up. All right. Listen, I'm going to get into some mash because I feel like I have a lot of things kind of brewing in my mind that I'm going to throw in here. The first one is going to be a classic, but I feel it applies for you and you'll relate to it. Three movies from any time period that you wish were like a real world that you could just jump into and get all over you and be in.
Lord of the Rings.
Great. Great. Oh my God. Are we going to Hobbiton?
Yes.
Are you so excited?
You're staying extra.
I'm not staying extra.
Oh, that sucks.
I know. Well, because I've done a lot of this before. I've never been to Sydney, mm-hmm. but I've been to Wellington and mm-hmm. Auckland.
Yeah,
and
me too.
Since we're leaving there, since we're ending there, I think also I'm just going to be gone so much. I think in my head,
I think you're being super lame. I think you need to stay the three extra days.
I don't know why I didn't just say this to begin with, because you will understand this implicitly, but that is exactly the production time of You're the Worst, which is your show I'm on. So I already had to say,
you were on that show.
Well, because we block shoot, I already have to say,
of course.
I can't be there for those 10
of
days.
Course.
So you can't shoot anything that I'm in. So yeah. Of course I can't do it for a long period of time. I don't know why I was like, well, here's all the reasons. Like, in the back of my mind, I was like, wait,
yeah,
no, I feel like there's a really practical
that's,
work reason
that's
I can't
the only
stay
one
longer.
You had to
yeah.
say.
But yeah, Hobbiton. Ugh, I just talked about that with Rebecca Watson, who just did the podcast, because she also has a love of Lord of the Rings. And we had the conversation of like, don't look inside.
Well, here's what I was about to
right. Have you been to the Hobbit holes before?
Here's what I was about to tell you. I worked in New Zealand for about 6 weeks years ago, and it was great. I purposefully did not go to Hobbiton. Mm. And to be honest, I probably won't this time. That'll kind of take away. Like, I don't want to go to Hogwarts. I really don't want to go to.
Right.
I have no interest. Like,
yeah.
I've seen what they've created and I loved it, but I still have my own idea in my mind. And that's the world that
I respect that so much.
I like
much.
To be in. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the other one would be La Dolce Vita.
Okay. Great.
And then the third. Oh God. I have so many great answers for this.
By the way, 10 of which you will be driving away going like, oh,
why did I say that
one? But that's part of the exercise is I think it kind of stimulates those like synapses in our brains. And I like the idea that you carry that with you for the day, kind of thinking like, oh my God, oh, that reminds me of this movie I haven't seen in a long time or whatever. But this is the improv part of it where it's like,
Howl's Moving Castle.
Okay, next category is three people from any time, any place, but real people that you wish could be a mentor.
Okay, Josephine Bonaparte.
Did you read that book?
Which one?
I don't remember.
Are you talking about the series? They wrote a series based on her.
Yes, I think I only read the first one.
Oh, you didn't finish them.
Did I read more than one? It was like right when they came out.
And it's like it goes from like her really early life and all the way through. Yeah,
maybe I did. You know what? I remember her like well through the Napoleon sort of, she separated from him in this. Like I read for sure.
Well, he separated from her. Yeah.
So I can't. So I must have read more than one.
Yeah.
I think.
Maybe you read all of them.
Maybe I did.
Boudica. And the third would have to be, they have to be real.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Taylor.
Great. Okay. Next category will be three skills that you wake up with tomorrow that you are just impeccably great at, like Matrix style, your brain downloaded that information, you wake up and you're like, I know Kung Fu.
Okay, French.
Great.
I love all the skills I have. I'm trying to think. I would love to be a violin virtuoso. Like, does that count? Like, even though I play,
absolutely.
Like, I would like to be a lot better at it.
No, absolutely.
Okay. And rock climbing.
Sure.
We'll just go ahead and we'll just throw that out there.
I would also love to be great at that and feel totally fearless about it.
Yeah.
Although I guess some fear is probably what keeps you alive. But listen, in this MASH world, you can be fearless and be totally safe.
I love rock climbing. I grew up doing it.
But, oh, it's great.
You know, I never did like a massive, you know, not without ropes and stuff. Like I'm thinking like ropeless.
Free,
you know,
free
up there.
Ropeless.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have some fear attached to that. All right. That's okay. That's okay. Okay, next category will be, I'm going to jump into this this one because now I'm curious who you'll say. It can be totally age inappropriate in the sense that like,
ooh,
I have to be honest and say I had a huge crush on, I mean, like these guys know that like when everyone loved Michael J. Fox when I was a kid, I like wanted to marry Kevin Kline.
Nice.
So there's no judgment on that. Three people. Ideally, people that someone would know who they are from any time. And it can be also like this person at this age. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, sure.
If you want that.
Okay.
Three. Now, this could be a romantic encounter or it could be like alternate universe companion that you spend your life with. Whatever you want.
So three men that are real.
Mm-hmm.
Can be fantasy.
You know what? If they're from fiction, I'm totally open for that. Totally.
I definitely have three real ones. Okay. Willem Dafoe.
What a sizzler.
Oh, he's so sexy.
I don't even know what I meant by that, but you knew.
I totally knew what you meant. I mean, you seem wild at heart, right?
Yeah, that movie was a big deal for me. Like, when it came out, I saw it multiple times in the theater. I really was, like, very fascinated by that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get it.
Good. Let me think.
God, that's such a specific character. Danger.
Yeah. I have so many rolling around in my head. Like here's something. Like, I don't want to be with Gary Oldman. I want to be with Gary Oldman as Dracula.
I totally get it. And I'm putting that down.
Okay.
Because there was a time when I would have said that I wanted to be with Hannibal Lecter.
Okay, good. Good. So I get terrible. That. But I get it.
Oh, God. It just has to do with, like, I think when you're, especially when you're, if you're somebody who sort of, like, is fascinated by stuff and isn't necessarily looking at it as literally as, like, of course I want to have sex with someone who eats people. Like, it's not that. It's the representation of, especially when you're an adolescent, I think, but for many of us, like, they stay attached. If you're speaking of fantasy anyway, you're not going to go out and, like, marry someone who's in prison. I would hope, I guess, but all due respect to all of my prisoner listeners, I'm not sure I have. But that the adrenaline of intoxicating, like, sexy, scary, dangerous is, like, a real thing.
I mean, there's, I'm all into it,
you know.
And then Jafar.
Amazing. Boy, I don't know what I thought you would say as the last one, but I'm absolutely delighted. Okay, great. Next one, perennial favorite of mine, sadly, three foods that are not great for you, but that you can have at the snap of a finger with zero physical ramifications, no matter what. It's okay. Almost like it's good for you.
Lay's potato chips.
Fantastic.
Mint slices, which is a cookie out of Australia that I
great.
Adore. And then, oh God.
What is a
mint slice?
Mint slices. Does it have chocolate involved, or is it?
It's, you know, like a yeah. It
is it like a the Girl Scout cookie that's a wafer.
But it's so much better. Uh-huh. Like it's it has an extremely thin wafer, a huge pile of mint on top of it. I'm talking about like a thick, like an inch's worth of like mint.
Yeah.
And then it has like a melted chocolate coating around the whole thing.
Okay. It sounds almost like a peppermint patty, but like creamier with the crunch of the little thin wafer. Sounds great.
They're so good. We will eat them when we are in Australia.
Sounds like it has gluten in it. That would make me very sick.
However, you know, I changed my mind. And pappardelle pasta would be the next one.
Okay. Yeah. What did you say that I interrupted?
Oh, tater tots.
Oh.
And I was like, I already said one potato, so I'm just going to throw it out.
Tater tots are like...
I mean, I eat tater tots all the time. All the things I just said, I eat all the time.
Well, great.
Wait, can you put drinks? Can we put booze?
Sure, sure. I'm going to put the... You know what? That'll just be the next category.
Okay.
Okay, booze it up.
Amaretto sours. Champagne.
I don't know if I've ever had an amaretto sour.
Oh, we're going to go get amaretto sours. And lemon drops.
Oh, yeah, that's a tasty one.
Martini, not shot.
Martini. I very carefully made sure to put that. Good. Okay. So the we kind of touched on this with the first category of like movies that you can jump into and just be in. But I'm also going to go with real or imaginary places that you actually have a house. Like you that is like your second home. It's like, okay, this is where I will be spending all of the time that I'm not in Los Angeles.
And you said real or imaginary. Real or imagined. Okay. Well, one that is very real that I am actually trying to work on. I would love a home right on the slopes at Deer Valley.
Okay. Utah. Great.
Rivendell.
Yeah. It's so twinkly and glowy.
Oh, it's just so beautiful. Peaceful.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, there are so many places. I would really love to live in Andor. It's A-N-D-O-R from Wheel of Time, if you've read those books.
I haven't. Andor, Wheel of Time.
Mm-hmm.
What's Wheel of Time as a series? Is it like young adult books or is it adult books?
Oh, it's adult. Okay. It's by...
I have a minor obsession with young adult books, like more of the sci-fi than like vampire-y stuff. But okay, like I just love. So but anyway, like, Andor. Okay, great.
So like what? Like a
Mortal
Instruments.
Like A Wrinkle in Time is like my favorite book of all time. Like anything, yeah, anything where it's like.
Did you read Uglies?
No.
You would love that. It's very sci-fi.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna write that down on the back of this mash card. Okay.
You're one of those. Did you just say? I did. I thought A Wrinkle in Time was. Never
Let's
mind.
Have it
I
out.
Won't go. Oh, no, I'm not. Battle. I'm not going to go there. It was a long time when all I right. read it. I will tell you the one thing that stuck out in my mind was when all the kids are bouncing the balls and the one kid can't do it right. That's always stuck in my brain.
There's just a lot of important symbolism in
and
that.
And I always
book,
think
Molly.
Communism when I think about that part.
Yes, exactly.
And I was like, communism.
Yeah.
That book was just too, there was too much real information in it, I think, for me to enjoy.
That's the sissy I was into that. Like, I was a huge, like, I like you with the movies that you were seeing too young. I was reading books with, like, high scientific concepts too young and was like, I don't know how this is getting in there, but, like, you spit it out later and you're like, oh, I guess I did learn something from that. Totally get it. Okay, final category. Interesting. Final category is if you could replace someone, and this doesn't mean like you think you would do a better job, but in a play or a film that is iconic, a character that you probably won't get to play for one reason or another, but maybe you will, but like, you know.
No, probably not, and I probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
I've turned down a couple of remakes because of how great the actors were in the originals. And I'm very, very proud to say that.
Yeah.
I would love to do Gloria Swanson's part in Sunset Boulevard. Elizabeth Taylor and, you know, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. And, oh goodness, why am I blanking on her name? Gone with the Wind.
Scarlett O'Hara?
Yes. But I want to remember her name. Vivian Leigh.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm like... What if I just give the first sound of the... Okay, great.
I met a guy last night who said his name was Ashley. And I was like, he was very, very nice English accent went along with this. And I was like, oh, like Gone with the Wind. And he got so excited. He was like, yes, yes, you're the only one who's put that together.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, of course. And then I realized, oh, it's probably a big deal because a lot of people over here like think it's a girl's name. Like, you don't meet a lot of guys named Ashley and Boar, but probably in England.
Yeah, there are a few. Yeah, but it's true. I don't even, you don't even hear about that much there.
No, now you have, like, Danger and Buck and Buck. Apple Pit. I don't know.
Yeah, like, Apple Pit is a classic.
Weird names now.
It's true. It's true. Yeah, I like the idea of going to a way back name. As much as coming up with something that no one's ever been named their child because it's an object or whatever.
I met a woman who had to be my grandmother's age, so in her early 70s, who's and we were in Jefferson, Texas, and her name was Dreema.
Dreema.
Dreema. Dream with an A.
Yes, I've heard Dream. Like, that is a,
it's
that
such
is
an
a
old
name.
School name.
Yeah, but yeah. It's great.
Love it. I love that name.
Bring that back ASAP.
My grandmother's name is Floribel, which is one of my favorites.
Oh, that's
too.
Very sweet, isn't that too. That's a good, like...
It's if you were a fairy.
Exactly. I was going to say very ethereal. Very ethereal. It's great. Okay, tell me when to stop. This is how I figure out, you know, which of these you're going to end up with for your 100% guaranteed MASH future. Mm-hmm. Tell me when to stop. This seems extra loud, the sound of this marker.
Okay, stop.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to pause this. Do some quick math.
Okay.
It's not math. And come back with your 100% guaranteed fictional future. Perfect. I bet you brought down the house. All right. This is great. I'm very excited about all of this. First of all, I'm going to get right into it and congratulate you on your mansion in Deer Valley.
Yes.
Not bad. Like a beautiful, because you're a generous
snowy
gal.
Mansion.
So you're going to be like, who wants to come and roast marshmallows at the fire? Do a little skiing, do a little snowman building.
Yes, yes.
Great. Deer Valley, gorgeous. Utah's great. I'm from Arizona, and I have such a fierce love for, like, the Four Corner states that I'm, like, kind of annoying about it. And also don't spend any time in any of them anymore, so I can, you know, so I'm just like, but they're wonderful. It's very special.
Mm-hmm.
But it's great. I want to congratulate you on... Oh, and also, this makes a lot of sense, too, for the Utah area. Expert rock climber.
Yay.
Right?
All right.
Those fit.
All
those
right.
Totally
That's
fit.
Not bad that I have something to do when I'm not skiing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want you to rest assured because, of course, you didn't get Rivendell, but you get to go into Lord of the Rings whenever you want.
Oh.
Thus you can still visit it. So you
Excellent.
Really kind of cheated the system on that one. Very well played.
Thank
Great
you.
Great job. I want to... This also works for me. This idea of you playing Gloria Swanson in Sunset Boulevard... And your iteration of her really enjoys an amaretto sour and
yes.
Lay's potato chips.
Yes!
That yes. feels right on the
you
money.
You realize that's the person I'm going to eventually become.
There
in
you go.
Life.
There you go. You'll have your beautiful turban and yes. your amaretto sour.
And my cigarette holder.
And your cigarette holder. Exactly. Listen, I'm excited that we're getting there a little sooner than planned. And then advice-wise, I'm very excited that you did get Josephine Bonaparte.
Oh, great.
You'd spend the most time talking about her. Very excited.
Yes, and we'll argue the whole time.
I'm sure. She was feisty, too. Mm-hmm. And then last but certainly not least, your sizzling affair with Mr. Willem Dafoe. Great work, everybody.
Yes.
Great work.
I love my life.
You got a great MASH life. I welcome you to celebrate it on your drive over to get a delicious tuna melt, which sounds like nothing more I'd rather do. Molly, thank you so much for doing the
thank
podcast.
Thank you.
I can't wait to be in Down Under with you.
We're going to have such a good time drinking amarettos and eating potato chips.
I mean, I can certainly do both of those things. No one's going to stop me. People can, so obviously find you on the Thrilling Venture Hour, obviously find you on Castle. Mm-hmm. That's a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. On Twitter, at Molly Quinn.
At Molly Quinn 93.
At Molly Quinn 93. Awesome. Guys, thank you for, I was about to say thank you for enjoying the podcast. Like, I'm assuming. I know you all really enjoyed this, so thank you for enjoying it, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving nerdist.com.